Hello, everyone. Welcome to our 8 days to go until the NFL Draft Chicago Football Podcast. Of course, as we tape, we are 9 days away, I should say. April 28th, first round in Chicago. We'll finally know who the Bears pick number 11 overall. Maybe they'll trade up or trade down. Who knows? But we can stop speculating and talk about the newest Bear. And we're going to keep speculating on this podcast. That's what we do here on the Chicago Football Podcast. I'm Kevin Fishbane. You can follow me on Twitter at KFishbane. Got my producers here, Dan Mott at Mott's Thoughts and John Solly at J Solly. And our guest on today's program is going to be Mike Tenier of Bleacher Report. He's officially going to be a friend of the program, which we'll congratulate him on. He was on the podcast back in the fall. He'll break down some of the pre-draft stuff with us, go through some of the Bears options. And then at the end of the show, we're going to talk about the schedule. Bears schedule came out last week. Actually, one of my favorite moments of the year. It's a very silly day, but I really love when the schedule comes out. But we'll get to that at the end of the program. Remember, you can follow all our Bears content at Bears_Insider. And, John, I have narrowed down the possibilities who the Bears can draft at 11 to 12 players.
That's a lot of players.
A lot of players. Which means a lot of articles to pre-write. So I'm really hoping...
We're keeping you busy here.
...to tighten that up. Actually, I was at the horrible White Sox game last night with a couple friends. And after Carlos Rodon gave up his fifth run in the first inning, somebody asked me, oh, who are the Bears going to pick at 11? I said, yeah, I got it down to about seven or eight guys, and I went through them. And then in the second inning, I said, you know what, I just added a couple. By the time we were on the way home, I was up to 11. And then this morning, I thought of another one. So we're up to 12, and I will unveil those players in a few minutes with Mike Tenier. But it does – you know, when they have the 11th pick, and it's not so much – because when they had the 14th pick a couple years ago, we had narrowed it down with that need in the secondary to a few guys. I mean, I had the Kyle Fuller story ready. I think I had six stories ready to go. But this year, when you have the 11th pick and so many options to trade up or down, it really adds to the fun of it. And we're going to talk a little about what the Bears are going to do and part of this pre-draft stuff with a friend of the program, Mike Tenier, NFL National lead writer for Bleacher Report. Follow him on Twitter at Mike Tenier. Mike, congratulations on this being your second appearance on the Chicago Football Podcast. We will get you a friend of the program t-shirt in the mail soon.
I want a friend of the program t-shirt and a bumper sticker. I'm proud to be here, even though I have no idea what the Chicago Bears are going to do in this upcoming draft.
Well, that's okay, because it's my job to cover it, and I have no idea. But we'll get to the Bears in a second. We had Peter Schrager on last week talking about mock drafts and some of the fun parts of the pre-draft coverage. And Mike, you're all over the pre-draft coverage. We see you at the Senior Bowl every year, the Combine. I want to talk about mock drafts first. What is your favorite part about mock drafts?
Being done. Being over. A mock draft is a form of anxiety for me because I see one thing on the internet, one thing with my eyes when I watch these guys, and hear this insane smokescreen coming from every team. And it fills me with this dread of saying, I'm going to pick somebody that no matter what, the entire fan base of that team thinks it's a stupid pick, obviously not a smart pick. And when it explained to me, well, things that I know anyway and things that I didn't necessarily know. Like, I didn't know that guy visited the team last Tuesday at 9:45 a.m. I don't keep up with it that much. So I'm kind of happy when those are over. That said, it's fun putting guys in place. It's fun playing matchmaker. And it's fun sometimes looking at these things and saying, boy, the way this really works, oh, my goodness, Jalen Ramsey could fall to number 8 or number 9. And that kind of gets exciting because it changes the whole dynamic of how you think of the draft.
Yeah, I've learned it gets really difficult and frustrating when you get into the 20s because then you have some of those teams who might trade back into the first round, the Rick Spielman special, as I like to call it, from the Vikings. And I remember my first couple years of Pro Football Weekly when I kind of started to learn about the draft and the process. You know, our official mock draft that we released the day of the draft, which there was a lot of insight from people around the league, and I was really excited to see how our mock draft was going to fare. And I think one year we got 5 out of 32 correct in terms of team pick and player. It's just so impossible, but that does add the fun to it. And I mentioned this in the last week's podcast, and I'm curious if you're okay with my philosophy on this. I will do about three. This year I just did three NFL mock drafts that we had to do for Pro Football Weekly, and I gave the Bears a different player every time. And and that way you can really expand and you have a better chance of being correct.
You have a future in talk radio that way, because then you can say, I made this pick, and mix and match from all of those and claim, you know, a 60% success rate. I like that, because I think our goal is A, to entertain with these, B, to give some fans a realistic sense that, no, you know, Jalen Ramsey will not be there in the middle of the second round for you, because, look, this is how it stacks up. And see, to give like a wide range of possibilities there. So if in the first one you say this, and maybe you got new information, but maybe you've just sort of had a change of heart, the next one say this, you can show how the draft will be shaped, how that draft has to be shaped. Hey, here's what happens if the Bears get an offensive tackle. Here's what happens if they address secondary. Here's what happens if Ezekiel Elliott somehow falls to them. And you can show them these different things. And that's all the fans can want right now. And you'll probably agree with me. Getting the input from the teams is invaluable, because you do need that input. But sometimes it's less than informative, because you realize I'm either getting told what they want to tell me, or I'm getting told something that is going to change for the team as well as for me 6 weeks from now anyhow.
Well, right. I talked to somebody who you know, said that he talks to a couple of GMs before he does the mock draft. And on the one hand, if a GM says to him, hey, we're going to draft player X here, he's probably not going to put that in his mock draft, because he doesn't want to ruin that source either. So you never know when you look at these. But you do know that teams look at the mock drafts, because that gives them an idea of what other teams are thinking. Now, when we were in this process, and Mike, you and I have a fun history of our years at the Senior Bowl together, and that's really where the silliness kind of begins of the overrating of things. And we talk about the 40 at the combine and the hand size and the visits and all these things as some of the overrated parts. What's something that maybe – what part of the process do you think is maybe underrated or even rated accurately in terms of media and fans put the right amount of stock into this that the NFL teams do?
Well, I mean, I would say the tape and the production at this point, especially now that I think more people are actually watching more than just like highlight reels with rap music behind them of these players. I think that gets the right amount of attention. I think for a lot of people, and I'm talking more about the high level people, you know, the Mayocks and stuff like that, than necessarily all of us cool kids on Twitter. You know, the emphasis on what the player does well, I think, is where it starts. And you say, what is this guy? What can he do well? Well, he's a big, huge running back whose legs keep churning. Oh, he's a big, tall guy who can throw real hard. Okay, he's a receiver with 4.3 speed. I think when you really look at the ratings, people get that and they get an understanding of it. Okay, he's a tall, physical cornerback with 3 years of experience. All those core things, when you put him in the first round, I think everyone gets that and says, okay, that's the archetype there. That gets the right amount of attention. Just about everything else in this, from, you know, micro-analyzing 40 times to, I think the worst of all at this point is pro days. I think pro days are just completely off the charts in terms of just excuses to, like, hype up a player or to, like, obsess over a 40 time. Everything else is just, especially if you're like us and you kind of live on draft Twitter, it can get really, really, like, overstated and really chewy and kind of ridiculous very quickly.
It absolutely can, and I think you made a great point, too. When you look at how big of a deal the draft has become, so all these things like the pro day and the 40s become bigger deals, but so do, you know, draftbreakdown.com. I know you go there, I go there to kind of watch tape of these guys. You have all these kind of amateur draft nerds and draft pundits, so they all realize that you've got to watch the tape, too, so they're trying to find these things out. So that brings us to the top of the draft. And before we get to the Bears, Mike, I got to ask you, how are the Browns going to screw up the number two pick?
I think the best way to screw it up is to just go out and get the second choice quarterback. You know, whether it's Wentz or whether it's Goff, I don't think either of these guys are ready to walk into the Cleveland Browns and compete with RG3 in a circus of a quarterback controversy with no one to throw to, only Duke Johnson to hand off to, an offensive line with one guy on it, no defense, and suddenly lead this team for the next 15 years. I don't think either of those guys are that guy. So that's the best way to do it. I think if they really do come up with something where they trade down, and they trade down, and maybe a quarterback falls to them if they trade down to 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 or something like that, but really infrastructure up this draft and get a panoply of guys, I don't think they can go wrong with that. But hey, saying, all right, well, Wentz was the number two guy. We're taking him. It's going to be a quarterback controversy. And the number one receiver is, I guess, Gary Barndage. That's a failure waiting to happen.
Yeah, and I guess here, you know, people in Chicago have been very frustrated, obviously, with the Bears. They did not enjoy the Jerry Angelo drafts, the Phil Emery drafts. They liked Ryan Pace's first draft, so they don't have to worry about having that Cleveland sense. So right before you came on, Mike, I was telling my producers here that I've narrowed it down to 12 options for the Bears at 11. And I've added some guys that I can see them maybe trading a couple spots down for. So I'm going to give you my 12. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ezekiel Elliott, Jack Conklin, Ronnie Stanley. Those are the three offensive players. Then you got the D linemen, A'shaun Robinson, DeForest Buckner, Kevin Dodd, Shaq Lawson, Leonard Floyd, Jerron Reed, and Sheldon Rankins. And then the two corners, Vernon Hargreaves III and Eli Apple. Now, they can't draft all of them, I don't think. And it's also very possible they draft somebody that I did not mention in that list. But those are – and I've kept adding to it. I just added Eli Apple as I walked into the studio today because I'm thinking about how much of this need is at corner, and I can see them either taking him at 11 or trading down a few spots. Okay, so of those 12 names, who do you like the best?
I was going to put one of the linemen in my mock draft. I was either going to put Stanley or Conklin in there, and I still kind of like that. You know, one of the things that makes – I'm very confused by the Bears' direction. I'm just going to say that right now. But assuming that the last draft was really good, we don't know about Kevin White, but, you know, Goldman and those other guys are good. I don't know what their direction is right now. I think that a lot of their needs are at positions like interior line, the guard positions. I think it's safety. Those are the ones you go to a second or third round and you come back to. And I'm not sure what their defensive line need is. You mentioned all those great defensive linemen. I think there's great defensive linemen in this class. Grabbing one or the other of those guys is good. But, you know, I think Goldman was a good pick last year. I think Sutton's going to be a good ball player. I think they got some young players there, so I'm not sure where they're going there. But if we take a Conklin or a Stanley, let's throw Stanley in there. We assume then that Bobby Massey is really either going to wind up at guard or he's going to be part of like a shuffle there, and that they use that as a way of upgrading two positions, like you get a franchise-level left tackle, and then you can move Long back inside, or you can move Massey inside, or you can create depth. That seems to make the most sense based on what I think they're trying to do right now, which I'm not sure I know what they're trying to do.
You know, from watching Ronnie Stanley, there's nothing that I do in my life better than Ronnie Stanley gets into his pass set. I mean, that is like – I mean, and I'm not like a not, you know, I'm still a little bit of a novice in this of watching tape, of watching offensive linemen, but I know when a guy gets into his pass set and it's so quick, and I wish I could do anything half as good as that. But that brings me to the situation that, you know, all GMs do the whole best player available spiel, and Ryan Pace is, he really likes that. He talks about it a lot. When you look at the defensive linemen, and this is where we get into the issue, Mike, where we don't know how the Bears draft board looks. So we can kind of pool all the draft rankings and see where these guys fall, but the Bears could have somebody way higher, way lower. The defensive line is arguably the deepest position, especially those interior defensive linemen. You could go get maybe a Chris Jones in the early of the second round or the Butler, the kid out of Louisiana Tech. There's some options there in the second round. So from what you've observed in the drafts over the years and how teams handle this, how do you best balance the, well, I could take an A'shaun Robinson now, but I could also handle another need and take a pretty good player in the second round too versus, no, this is a need. Let's go ahead and just take it now and get it out of the way here at 11.
I think most teams try to avoid that here's the need and yet here's the special player dichotomy. It's like you go get the special player. And I think in the Bears' case, they're not outstanding anywhere where they can say, oh, my God, we're set here, so therefore – I mean, I mentioned that, you know, Goldman's a good player. I think they got some good players through the pipeline there. They're not set anywhere at the defensive line where if they look there and they see, you know, if they really like one of these guys, I think A'shaun Robinson – it probably could be, you know, he's actually, yeah, no, he could be an outside end for them. I think that works. I think Jerron Reed could fit them in the right way. I think you can go out and do that. It's the trick of, this is a draft where, like you mentioned, at defensive tackle, going into the second round, there's all kinds of interesting players out there. And that's where it gets tricky for them to say, that's the difficulty. But I think what you said before is, you know, Stanley is potentially a special player. If you're saying the next tier up type of guy, Stanley could be the guy on that list. Lord knows, I think Ezekiel Elliott is on that list. I don't think he falls to him. I think somebody goes up and gets him at some point. But when those players are there, Bears don't strike me as a team to say, well, we are just in too strong at some position that we just have to move away from that and not put those guys into consideration.
Ezekiel Elliott's been, from a Chicago's perspective, the most fascinating guy to watch over the past few weeks, because a month ago, 2 months ago, I would have said no shot. Then the Bears make an aggressive play to sign C.J. Anderson after talking up Jeremy Langford at the Combine and obviously not re-signing Matt Forte, who is just beloved here in Chicago. Then you pair in the fact that the Bears running back coach, Stan Drayton, was Elliott's running back coach at Ohio State. Plenty of familiarity there. I agree with you. I think they'd have to move up because the Giants would consider him, the Eagles. You could see Miami trying to trade up to get him. Uh-huh. But when you look at the running back position, you look at somebody like Ezekiel Elliott, and you think to yourself, on the one hand, the Bears could be really set there with Elliott and Jeremy Langford. On the other hand, it could be considered a luxury pick when you have all these needs on defense. How do you view that situation?
I think if he's there, they should take him. I call him LaDainian Tomlinson. I think he's a LaDainian Tomlinson type of guy. I think if there's people listening out there, it's like, oh, it's just another big running back, and you know, we know of it. We had Curtis Enos and Rashawn Salon. That's not what this is. Certainly, this is a guy who can catch the ball out backfield, can catch the ball down the field out backfield, pass protect, inside, outside, all that. You get him. And you know what that would do for me mentally as I look at that team? It at least give me some idea what this offense is supposed to look like, you know, as they move forward now. I know they got a new coordinator over there. You know, right now when I look at them, I don't know what I'm going to be looking at. I know what Jay Cutler does. I know he had a good season last year under Gase. I don't know Kevin White. I don't know what he's going to be capable of after a year away. The tight end situation is different now. If Elliott's there and you put him in there and we get the idea that this is going to be built around that kind of backfield and there's going to be that running element, maybe there'll be some option element, maybe like a shotgun inside outside zone element to it. We can start putting the things together. I know the Bears can't think like that. But, you know, I can think like that, and they can also look at this and say, if we're trying to set a tone, this is a good move. Again, I go back to the idea that, you know, I think that they have needs on defense. I think that they've got a pipeline on defense, too. There's a lot of younger guys there I haven't seen enough of, but I think he'd come in and be good ball players for them as they develop into their roles.
And I think you also, when you're talking about running back, you have the Todd Gurley example. I mean, you could look at what he did last year and see that you can find a special player. And I always remind Bears fans of this, and it's, you lost Matt Forte, you lost Martellus Bennett, but you did not replace them. You promoted guys who looked really good last year, but Jeremy Langford was a fourth-round pick for a reason. Zach Miller had a career year, but he's had injuries in his career, and he's 31 years old. You're not going to draft a tight end early, obviously, so you can see why you'd want that jump start to the offense. And one more kind of Bears thing for you, Mike, staying on offense. You mentioned Jay Cutler. A lot of people expect this is going to be a year that Ryan Pace drafts a quarterback in the mid-round. And the mid-round quarterbacks, to me, are, you know, everyone wants to find the Kirk Cousins or the Russell Wilson, but when you look at the numbers, it's very, very difficult to find one of those. So really, you're picking a guy who maybe he'll be a starter one day, but at best, you know, he'll be your backup for 3-4 years, looks good in the preseason, then you can trade him or you can put him in at starter. When you look at the mid-round quarterbacks and then you look at the philosophy of trying to find a guy there when you're in the situation the Bears are, how do GMs handle this best? You know, what's the best way to attack that situation?
This year I would probably take it off. You know, there is no Russell Wilson. Let's get that out of the way.
Right.
You know, is Kirk Cousins really Kirk Cousins? You know, I'm going to throw that out there and say, oh, well, they found this diamond. Let's see what happens when he starts playing a full schedule when he's not playing the Eagles who have quit and the Cowboys who have quit in some of the other games he had last year. But I think there are Kirk Cousinses out there in that there are guys who, if you put him in as a developmental guy, if you started some games, if he was your backup, could be really good. You know, I think Prescott is a guy you can put on your bench and could be there, you know, when he's 33 years old on benches doing spot starts. I'm a big Brandon Dowdy fan. I think he's one of these guys who's going to hang around the NFL for 16 years as kind of the pepper pot off the bench, the Bruce Gradkowski type, the Ryan Fitz type, one of those guys. But then I look and say, who's developmental? Who's there that's like got all this package and has to put it together? I guess Cardale Jones probably fits that bill. I guess you could argue Hackenberg fits that bill, although I think both of those guys have so many red flags. That's like a, hey, he's still here in the sixth round. Why not? There's not a lot of guys there say, well, this is raw, but we can shape it into place. And that's a concern in this draft. Usually there's a couple of those guys. Normally Wentz would be that guy, or Paxton Lynch would be that guy, but Wentz is going to go in the top 5, and Lynch will probably be gone by the middle of the second round. So you don't have that this year. So you're left looking at all these kind of square pegs, and a lot of them I like as, you know, again, as pieces, as a guy who comes in. If you're the Cowboys and you need somebody to start a couple games, or you need somebody to start behind Aaron Rodgers, it's different than the situation that the Bears are in, where it's like, okay, we need somebody who could be this guy for the future.
And I think it seems like next year's draft will be deeper at quarterback, but the country, we still have a quarterback shortage of sorts in this country that needs to be figured out. And you wrote about one of the quarterbacks that people thought could be the guy, and he has in quite the downward spiral. You wrote about Johnny Manziel today over at Bleacher Report, and the news just came out as we're talking, as we're recording, that Drew Rosenhaus felt the need to put out a statement that he is now no longer Johnny Manziel's agent. I don't know why he needed to do that, but that's what Drew decided to do. Mm-hmm. When, and I'm not going to sum up your article, but when you look, I thought you made some great points about the bigger picture with Manziel and the way that we cover him. What's been, in your opinion, the problematic, you know, way that the media has handled the Manziel situation?
I think early on, I think we were a little too quick to kind of joke it off. I think I personally probably should have seen some of these warning signs when they were coming across and been a little bit more critical early on. I think now it's pretty good on, in one respect, in that there's a sort of a chorus of understanding here. You know, there's not a lot of people out there still yucking it up about this. That's more the TMZs and the tabloids and stuff like that. In the sports end, I think we do a better job of that. I think we underestimate what kind of problem this is, what kind of common problem this is. You know, and that makes it kind of facile. You know, they're saying, oh, he needs to seek help. He needs to figure it out and get in and check himself in the rehab. If you understand this, if you understand how usually guys in their 20s get into the situation, both with alcohol and other substances, there's a lot more to it than that. He's kind of fighting for his life is what it boils down to. I think that's pretty clear right now. And he's fighting for more than the NFL. And that puts him in a difficult situation. And, we have to be compassionate, but at the same time, we have to recognize, yeah, these are some terrible choices. They're being terrible choices that are coming from a kind of a diseased will, from a situation of substance abuse, of problems, and something that, you know, we have to be compassionate about, but we have to be realistic about, not just for Johnny Manziel, but, you know, for our friends, neighbors, nephews, you know, college roommates, all of those people. This is a kind of a society problem that now we're getting a real good look at.
Absolutely agree, Mike, and go check out that article on Bleacher Report on Johnny Manziel. All right, back to the draft, just a few more here with Mike Tenier of Bleacher Report. Do you have a favorite player in the draft, a sleeper, if you will?
Well, Brenton Doughty is kind of like my little sleeper at quarterback. He's a kid from Western Kentucky. Loved him at the combine. Again, I have no illusions that this is a budding Russell Wilson or Tom Brady going through the ranks, but here's a guy you can bring in and be that spark plug off the bench, maybe be a guy who comes in and starts for a season while you're trying to figure something else out. He's somebody I love there. One of the guys I think that we all loved at the Senior Bowl, and his name always escapes me, so I have to slide and open up my thing, is Kenneth Dixon, the running back from Louisiana Tech. You know, we were talking about Ezekiel Elliott and that running back in the first round. I think Kenneth Dixon is going to go late in the first round, very beginning of the second round. I think this is a guy who, when you're looking at a modern running back who has that pass-catching, speed, playmaking combination, where you're thinking in terms of a committee, where you're saying it's going to be 20 touches, but it's going to be, you know, 12 carries and 8 catches or something like that, he's a guy who can come in, be a big upgrade, maybe for a team like the Bears, maybe for a team like the Packers, who never seem to have that playmaker, maybe a team like the Patriots, if they can move up out of their little conundrum and say, well, we finally need a real running back to catch those Tom Brady passes like we had with Kevin Falk. He's a guy that I really love, who I think could be a star early on.
Yeah, I liked Kenneth Dixon a lot at the Senior Bowl as well, Mike. And, you know, speaking of how silly mock drafts can be, I did a Bears 7-round mock draft, which will be out over the weekend. And I thought about Kenneth Dixon actually to the Bears at 41 in the second round, but I'm starting to worry if he'll be there. And I think his skill set's a little similar to Jeremy Langford. So I feel like if you're set with Langford and you're not going to take the Ezekiel Elliott, then you might as well wait a little bit longer for more of a middle-round guy. But I agree with you that Dixon's one of those players that I hate to use the rising up draft boards line. but he's somebody that's people that know a whole lot about a guy who went to Louisiana Tech, and he's certainly stepping into that mold. By the way, Brandon Doughty, for those of you keeping score at home, 9 1/8 inch hand size. So he is – not big, but he can officially be an NFL quarterback, Mike. So you're allowed to keep him as your sleeper.
So. Great. It's that kid from Arkansas that bothered me. Those are really tiny hands for that quarterback from Arkansas for a dude like who's 6'4".
And we're going to wrap up with this, Mike. The NFL schedule was released last week. And I was just telling the guys it's one of my favorite days of the year because here's what I think happened, okay? So Wednesday afternoon, Roger Goodell is seeing all this Kobe and Warriors coverage. And he says, well, we can't allow this to happen on our watch. Let's release a schedule Thursday. Then Thursday morning hits. We already know the schedule's coming out, and everyone's talking about Kobe, and everyone's talking about 73-9. So Roger's very confused by all this. He calls Jeff Fisher and says, Jeff, make the trade. Do it now. We can't have this anymore. We need to be tough. And suddenly all you heard about after about 10 a.m. on Sports Talk Radio was the trade for the top pick, and then once the schedule came out, they were breaking down the schedule. So, Mike, where does the schedule release rank among your favorite nights of the year?
It is among the worst because I think it highlights what's the worst about this, partially because I've been asked in the past earlier in my career to live blog the schedule show, ooh, which was – I mean, that's not really good for your dignity to say, oh, look at this. There's a TV show and I'm talking about it. And you know, people are making fun of you as you do it. But it kind of shows, first of all, how powerful the NFL is. That we can talk about that. Yeah, we're going to trump you with our schedule release. And secondly, in our little corner of the world where everybody has to blog everything and there has to be like 74 breakdowns of each thing, it's kind of personally embarrassing. I don't have to do it anymore. That all of our websites would all be like, top five takeaways. Top five interesting things about the Bears schedule this year. You know, six weird – and, like, this is crazy. It's a schedule. It's a list of teams that you knew they were going to play anyway. And, you know, I feel weird about it. Yet at the same time, I will look at the number of hits one of those articles gets, and thousands of people will be talking about it. Hey, the NFL's king. That pays the bills for us. I don't have to like it all the time, but we have to live in the world all the time.
I readily was self-deprecating, Mike, when I tweeted out, this is the dumbest thing I write a year, but I have a lot of fun with it. When I rank I rank the Bears schedule, and we're going to talk about that at the end of the podcast with my producers. And it is silly. It's dumb. But I try to make fun of myself and make fun of the process in the process because as a guy close to Philly, you know we have to trust the process.
Everybody has to trust the process.
All right, Mike Tenier, NFL national lead writer at Bleacher Report. Follow him on Twitter at Mike Tenier, MikeTanier. We'll be following you next week during the draft to get your witty insights as we do. Go check out his article on Johnny Manziel. Mike, officially a friend of the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Officially thrilled to be a friend of the program. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Again, Mike Tenier, go check out his stuff. And I was mentioning how nerdy I get about the schedule, and I also get super nerdy about the draft, and that's not where my nerddom ends per se. I got some video game interests, some other things. I'm a big Harry Potter fan. I'm getting really into the geek world. And that brings me to our new sponsor, Loot Crate, which is a monthly mystery crate for gamers, geeks, and fans of pop culture alike. It delivers cool and often exclusive items like collectibles, t-shirts, gadgets, and more. Some officially licensed merchandise. You gotta check out this stuff. Lootcrate.com. You have $45 value in every crate. Go check out the crates that they've had in the past months, and you can get a discount if you go to lootcrate.com/Shaw. That's lootcrate.com/SHAW. Use our promo code and you get $3 off your first crate. Go check them out, lootcrate.com/Shaw. All right, guys, we're going to stay with the nerdiness of things, and I probably should have mentioned that Mike's probably a self-identified nerd. He would enjoy lootcrate.com too, and of course we say that lovingly because that's who we are and that's what it is. And Mike was actually a math teacher back in the day. I believe he had Joe Flacco in his high school math class.
Was Joe Flacco an elite math student?
He was. He was the most elite math student. Sorry to break it to you, John, but he's been elite his entire life. That's just who he is.
I should have known.
But fun stuff from Mike because He really understands how this process works and what we've been doing for 3 months in the media and covering this stuff. And there is sometimes a disconnect between what teams are actually thinking and what, you know, we are thinking they're thinking. But it is fun, and there is some accuracy to trying to predict what happens. All right, so, John, you heard my 12 players.
It's a long list.
Did I miss anyone?
I mean, if guys fall, if for whatever reason,
Bosa, so Buckner was the highest rated guy.
That I think we're in agreement isn't going to fall, yeah. But there's like a scenario maybe out there where he does. So you have to mention it.
When I look at this, if we're going to go by draft rankings, and again, the Bears could have a completely different board than we're going off. And we're looking at Greg Gabriel, our draft guy here at Pro Football Weekly, and other draft guides that we've looked at. Ezekiel Elliott, Ronnie Stanley, Vernon Hargreaves III, and DeForest Buckner are guys who are top 10 talents, maybe even top 5 when you look at Buckner and Elliott. So the Bears would be really fortunate, I think, if one of those – and they happen to be at positions in need – if one of those four dropped to middle 11. That's where I think they might have to move up. The other guys are all kind of in the same category, and Eli Apple is my latest addition to this list. I'm going to try to watch some Eli Apple in the next few days to kind of get an idea of if he's somebody that the Bears would consider. Kind of reminds me of the Kyle Fuller situation a couple of years ago, where the Bears have their two starting corners. They have Kyle Fuller. They have Tracy Porter. You need a third corner. Bryce Callahan was nice last year, but he was an undrafted rookie. You're not going to you ideally don't want to go forward with that necessarily. So if you could get a Hargreaves, an Eli Apple, maybe someone in the second round. I have a cornerback actually going to the Bears in the second round of my 7-round mock draft. That's a tease. You can read that, by the way, in Friday's Sun-Times, Sunday's Northwest Herald, and it'll be on chicagofootball.com and profootballweekly.com over the weekend. You're really set at corner if you can get that guy, because you don't know Tracy Porter's long-term future. We still are not really completely sold that Kyle Fuller is a clear starter. So that's why I think Eli Apple suddenly, again, this morning, he just kind of popped in my mind as maybe the Bears are at 11, a couple of guys they wanted aren't there. They move down a couple spots and pick up a corner. And it's not a sexy pick because he'd be your number three guy to start. But that's a position of need in this league, and it's a position of need for the Bears.
Yeah, you're right. Let me go back to something you said earlier. What is the likelihood? Because we know that Ryan Pace likely tried to move up last year to get Marcus Mariota.
At least talked about it.
It was at least talked about. What is the advantage this year to moving up for the Bears and for Ryan Pace? How does that fit into his plan?
Well, the idea that they are going for it this year, quote unquote, because I don't believe in. I mean, I know they're rebuilding, but football's not like what Theo did with the Cubs. You gotta have to assume that you have a chance every year. I mean, look, after the Bears beat the Packers, we were all doing the playoff scenarios in our head last year. I think if you're going to go off what John Fox is saying at the owners' meetings, that they believe they can be more competitive this year, and you see a guy that can be the difference. If you think that a DeForest Buckner is going to take you from 7-9, 8-18, that guy alone can bring you to 9-7, 10-6, talking NFC wild card. You make that move, and the Bears have the ammo. Remember, last year they didn't have any of that kind of ammo really to do that. Now, there's also the Matt Slauson card here, and I hate to speculate trade. Matt Slauson was there at House Hall for the training. I personally think it'd be very odd if they moved him, but they have these other guards now, and it's been rumored. They have a potential trade trip and chip in addition to a player. But I mentioned this on Twitter last week. The Bears have not traded up in the draft since 1996. And again, completely different GMs. Doesn't really matter, but it just shows you traded up in the first round within a draft. And that was to take Walt Harris. It's not a thing it's a thing that teams that think they're one player away, or it's a thing that desperate GMs do. Ryan Pace is not
– he's neither one of those.
Not a desperate GM. I think he'll be very comfortable staying at 11 or even trading down, because he's very confident in his scouting staff and his own scouting abilities, which is why I think they could – they've moved down before for quarterbacks. Actually, 2003, they moved down twice.
To get Rex.
They got Rex. They also got Michael Haynes. I believe the year they took Kay McNown, they moved down as well. Don't go look back at that draft if you're a Bears fan. So they have some options there. But the defensive line is really interesting to me because, A'shaun Robinson, the best maybe body for the position, best physique. But he's not known as a pass rusher. If you go look at some of his 2013, 2014 tape, you see it a little bit more. Kevin Dodd, one-year wonder maybe, a little older. Shaq Lawson, can he play in a 3-4? Leonard Floyd, too skinny. Sheldon Rankin's too short. Jerron Reed doesn't have the pass rush ability. So, like, all those guys, you can say something about.
You're really talking me into these picks here, Kevin.
Buckner is the one that you don't have as many things, but I don't think he's going to be there. So that's why I asked Mike that question about you wait till the second round maybe to go get a defensive lineman if your guy's not there at 11, or you trade down to get one of these guys.
If Ryan Pace decides to trade up, who do you think that he winds up making the deal with? It's interesting that the Jags are sitting at number 5, and we've talked in the past about some of the connections with the Bears and the Jaguars, if you look at that. It'd be interesting to see if maybe that's a deal they work out.
Yeah, and the Jags are an interesting team because they don't need a ton on offense. I know a lot of people are mocking Miles Jack to them, but with the knee information, you know, what do you do there? They're a team that would love maybe a Darren Lee, who they could definitely get later in the first round, early in the second round. They need defensive backs, and Vernon Hargreaves at 5, you know, they could trade down. That's a big leap to get up to the 5th pick, though. We talked about this last week, that that 4th rounder can get them up 2 spots if you look at the trade value chart. So that's why you look at the Buccaneers as a team that might be willing to trade down. They have their quarterback. They have their offensive line set. They got their wide receiver. They don't have as – you know, that's a team that could look at Hargreaves as well. So that might be another option. The key – there's 2 keys to look at here in terms of what the Bears can do. When does Paxton Lynch go? Does a team leapfrog into the top 10 to take Paxton Lynch? The mock drafts I've been doing lately, I've been projecting that. I think somebody does it. The Jets, the Broncos, that'd be big moves for them. Maybe the Eagles move or, you know, take them where they are. So I think that's a player to consider. The other team to watch, I think, is the Dolphins, because that's the team that would be desperate for Ezekiel Elliott. Adam Gase, I think, would love to have Ezekiel Elliott there. And they could move into the top 10 if they feel like that's what they have to do to get Elliott. So I keep an eye on the Dolphins, keep an eye on what happens with Paxton Lynch and any team that needs a quarterback, you know, now that we know the Rams are number 1. So it's going to be fun. We got, again, another 9 days to kind of speculate. Maybe I'll add some more players to my narrowing down and have more articles to write. All right, guys, we're going to rank the Bears schedule, which I already did. And it's obviously the undisputed rankings.
Here we go. Bears schedule talk, people.
How about the Bears beginning the season in Houston? I think this is an exciting start because you got a playoff team. You have Brock Osweiler. Did you guys know that John Fox drafted Brock Osweiler? It was mentioned once or 17,000 times last year.
And based off yesterday, we know J.J. Watt is going to make it into work.
J.J. Watt will be there. He will be rising and grinding and ready to go. You could see some Watt versus Kyle Long. I actually ranked that 4th because you got to put the primetime games up high. So
do you?
I think you do because it's you know, we're talking about watchability here. So there's an excitement about watching a game in prime time versus some of the noon games. I didn't put all the primetime games. I moved the Cowboys game behind the Texans. I went the number 1 ranked game, week 2, Eagles at home, Monday Night Football. First home opener in prime time since 2003. First time you get to see Kevin White at Soldier Field. I think there's a lot of excitement. I think this is a game the Bears could be favored in. You know, the Eagles made a lot of changes, but Sam Bradford's still their quarterback. They got a new coach. So I put this game – you know, you usually put the Packers game first. I moved this one ahead of the Week 7 game at the Packers, Thursday Night Football. What do you guys think of this, by the way? Completely arbitrary, stupid thing I do, but it's so much fun.
I think it's a bunch of BS, Kevin. No, honestly, I actually do slightly disagree with you. Your number 3 game, Week 8 versus the Vikings.
Halloween,
yeah. Which
Jay Cutler will wear a costume.
As?
A Bears quarterback okay. With great hair.
I think that if we're talking about the Bears – you know, quote unquote, going forward or being in playoff contention. I think the consensus right now is that the Packers are still the team to beat in the NFC North. So if the Bears want to think about playoffs, the Vikings are a team they have to beat. And this is a, you know, middle of the season game. This is, I think, one of those spotlight games, obviously being on prime time. So I would actually put the Vikings game first. And then I've actually got Bears Packers third on your list because only because. Kevin White's Soldier Field debut is against
the Eagles. I'm going to admit this. The personal game I am most excited to watch as a reporter and cover is that week 8 game against the Vikings for the reasons you just mentioned. I think for the fans as a whole, they'll be so amped up for that week 2 game, especially if they beat the Texans in week 1.
That's fair.
You got to go back to the Packers game, the home game against the Packers because it's a rivalry. I think closing the season in Minnesota, that could be a huge game. It's going to be an awesome stadium. So is that Christmas Eve? I think, it's kind of cool they're having a game on Christmas Eve, so you throw that in there. Playing in New York, Eli Manning, that's exciting. And then you get some duds here. And that's what happens when the AFC South's on your schedule. All right. Andrew Luck, that's cool. But, week 5 at the Colts, I don't know. The Lions without Calvin Johnson, both those games, unless, again, we don't know about playoff implications, obviously, yet. The Titans, I mean, I think they're going to be an exciting team with Mariota, but
I think they're going to be an entertaining team. I don't know that they're going to be good.
And then the Jaguars, same thing. They're in that entertaining but not good. So at the week 6.
I'm in on the Jaguars this year.
My team is the Raiders, by the way. That's my sexy AFC pick, which is going to be very popular. But I said it here on April 19th. I think I said it earlier than that even.
I'll join you on that.
Week 10 at Buccaneers. Why did they have to fire Lovie? This game is no luster anymore.
The Lovie Bowl is done.
Lovie Bowl's done, and Chris Conte's the only former Bear on the roster as of now. That's not that exciting. No offense to Chris Conte, but,
that's been played out, too.
Yeah. Now, maybe one – now, there is a chance one of these teams I just mentioned brings in Josh McCown. And then you add some excitement. So, at my 15th game, week 14 in Detroit, because it's Detroit.
It was a good game last year.
It was an entertaining game last year. So I ranked 16th the bye week. It's election week, so that'll be really exciting for people. It's a good time to have the bye. And then I ranked bye week right ahead of week 13 versus the 49ers. I have nothing to say about this game. The 49ers are terrible on paper right now. And, they have Chip Kelly, which, cool. But I have nothing to say about this game.
Yeah, I'm with you. Who cares?
Robbie Gold revenge game.
Nah.
So that's your schedule. You can see those my watchability rankings on chicagofootball.com, and you can check out the full schedule there. Hub's also got a column in which Hub talked about – I made fun of him for this. And he made fun of himself, how silly it is to predict records when you get the schedule, and then he predicted the Bears are going to go 9-7.
Were you guys sad to see that the Bears were not going to play the Packers on Thanksgiving? Because I enjoyed that last year.
So you know who was really happy that the Bears were not playing on Thanksgiving?
Hub.
Bubby.
Bubby was thrilled, and my mother, that I will be home for Thanksgiving. They were very excited about that. By the way, fun thing for Chicago fans. The weekend the Bears play at the Texans, the Cubs are playing at the Astros. Mm. And that's going to be early September. Maybe some clinching scenarios the way things have gone. So if you're a big Chicago sports fan, that could be a fun weekend for you. And I mentioned this in the story, Bears-Vikings on Halloween could conflict with the White Sox-Cubs World Series. Although after watching the White Sox in person last night, I think it might just conflict with a Cubs World Series game. So that should be that could be fun too. But yes, Bobby was very excited that I'll be home for Thanksgiving this year. I told her I'll be late for our Christmas Eve dinner, but she said she was okay with that as Bears play against Washington that day. All right, guys, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Chicago Football Podcast. Huge thank you, of course, to Mike Tenier, friend of the program, at Mike Tenier on Twitter, Bleach Report, Talking Draft, my executive producer, Dan Mott, and my associate producer, John Sally. Be sure to check out all of our Shaw Media podcasts, by the way. We got a whole network of podcasts. John's coming up on the Fantasy Football Podcast. You got some new stuff coming
in? I'm excited. It's a little bit of a different show. It's a solo pod, but it is how Sam Hinkie's resignation letter from the 76ers is basically the way you should be playing fantasy football.
Ooh, all right.
So we'll see.
Tune in for
I'm,
that.
I'm excited.
And do you have any information about some of our other Shaw Media podcasts that maybe some folks might tune in for?
Yeah, obviously we've got the Pro Football Weekly podcast, and we're excited about that, especially with the draft so close. If you're an NIU sports fan, we've got our Husky Wire podcast with our guys in DeKalb going back and forth. They were just at the Gately Stadium practice for the Huskies. Huskies have been moving into Chicago lately and all trying right. to... get a bunch of the local kids out to NIU. And then on the lifestyle and entertainment side, we've got our Unprintable podcast. It's a Game of Thrones preview this week.
Oh.
Which is exciting.
All right. So check all those out. You can find all that, all of our stuff, of course, at chicagofootball.com. Check out our stuff as well at profootballweekly.com. Follow everything on Twitter. It's almost draft time. We'll have one more podcast previewing the draft, and then hopefully we'll talk to the number 11 pick or whoever the Bears pick in the first round next week right here on the Chicago Football Podcast.